best friends in Lewis, and they see Tria with Wade in the Water, the title track of his 1966 album. It was recorded live the year previous, 1965. Ramsey Lewis, of course, on piano, John Avant on trombone, Cleveland Eaton on bass, and Maurice White, you know him from Earth, Wind, and Fire, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday, where you get to say what you mean, and hopefully you mean what you say. So run your opinions and insights and ideas up the Lead Stories Free Your Mind flagpole and see who salutes. It's the best open forum, as you know, on the planet. It's our regular gathering place for the intellectually curious and the politically aware. So unfurl your flag and fly your own colors. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Give us your take on the issues of the day that make sense to you or don't make sense to you, and let's see how others react to what you're thinking today. 888-874-4888. Before I start, I just want to thank so many of you for starting what are, I'm calling, for lack of a better term, Lead Stories study circles, where people are forming these circles of study where, you know, they revisit programs that we've done here, and they talk among themselves about it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I especially want to reach out and say thank you, thank you, thank you to my friends at the Transit Workers Union. Thank you so much for your support of Lead Stories. It's a great joy to know that there are people out there who value the program this much, and it really keeps me going. So thank you so much for that. In South Carolina, we have a new study circle starting there. Thank you so much for that. In Brooklyn, another one starting. Thank you so much for that. So it's just a matter of reaching out to people you know who listen to the program, or who may not even yet be listening to the program regularly, but draw them in to the kinds of discussions we have here. Just yesterday, when we were talking about these cases that have come up, the prosecution of the police officers involved in the Laquan McDonald murder, as well as in the killing in Baltimore of Freddie Gray, the analysis we have gotten here, which, by the way, has been solidly on point, you can't get better than that, but you also can't get that anyplace else. All right. 888-874-4888. This is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. Fly your flag. Let's start in New York with Reggie. Hello, Reggie.
Hello, Eutrice. This is Reggie from New York, but I'm calling you from the great state of Michigan in the city of Detroit.
I'm
over here with some great news. I got a nephew that's graduating tomorrow from Eastern Michigan University, Air Force graduate, and he planned to be the next Alton H. Maddox. He's going to go on to law school and be that great lawyer for us, okay? So I'm just here to let your family know that, and our family. And the second thing I just wanted to say real quickly was, it was free in my mind, would be the fact that on tomorrow at 9:30, Alton Maddox will be giving a workshop at the Cotton Club. And everyone in the sound of my voice, like he was speaking on your show for entire week, nearly last week, all the information that he has to offer to our community, they need to please come out and support this great attorney. So that's all I want to call the thing I'm down with, is that tomorrow morning, even though I'm in Michigan, spirit and my money would be there with him. And the people who are out in different parts of the country, if you could, just find a way to send some money to that man, because he needs a war chest to be able to help us as a people, all people, to get justice. And I leave you with that. Thank you, Sister Eutrice Lead.
Thank you, Reggie, and congratulations to your nephew for achieving this great milestone in his life. Thanks so much for calling. In Berkeley, California, it's Harvey. Hello, Harvey. You're on the air.
Thank you, Utrice. Thank you. Wonderful, Utrice. Extra
thank you, wonderful, Harvey.
Well, I have.
You've given me a first name, a new first name. It's wonderful, Utrice. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
And you are wonderful. I have three positive renewable energy items, news items I wish to share with you and your great PRN listening audience. And the first one, the headline is UK's last coal miner stopped work today. Britain's last underground coal mine closes this Friday. 100 years ago, more than a million men made their living by digging coal from deep beneath the United Kingdom soil. As of today, there's none. That is great. And, you know, coal is...
Harvey, you lost you there for a couple of seconds. Could you just complete that last sentence again?
Okay. It said here that Britain's last underground coal mine closed this Friday. 100 years ago, more than a million men made their living by digging coal from deep beneath United Kingdom soil. And as of today, there are none. And I feel that coal is, you know, one of the major greenhouse gas pollutants. It's one of the biggest carbon dioxide emitters. And the way greenhouse gases work is that it takes the sun's infrared energy, these gases, take the sun's infrared energy and turn it directly into heat, which they emit into the atmosphere. And that's one of the major reasons why they say it's man-made, because everything we do produces carbon just about. Especially with our utilities and our transportation. So, but coal is going down. And here's the next one. In Washington, the House of Representatives passed a bill that includes a long-term extension of solar investment tax credit. Bipartisan members of both houses have reestablished America as the global leader in clean energy, which will boost our economy and create thousands of new jobs. So that's the national scale. And here in California, we have the what happened was the California Public Utilities Commission wisely stayed the course on renewable energy policy by sticking with a financial system that rewards rooftop solar owners and rejects the heavy charges that the utilities would have used to punish the solar industry. And this decision sends out a nationwide message that encourages renewable energy. And of course, it's just days after the Paris Climate Change Summit. So things are changing. They are going rapidly. And I really feel that really now is the time to get star powered. And I say, let's get solar.
All right. But in the meantime, as we see the presidential race heating up, we're seeing a renewed call. This is the renewable energy here, a renewed call for coal and mining and for drilling oil as ostensibly to decrease U.S. dependency on oil from the so-called Middle East.
Well, I feel... These industries are going down. I call them the fossil fuel industries for so many reasons. They don't work for us anymore. Number one, the fossil fuel industry, the coal, the oil, the natural gas, and the nuclear, they essentially what they do is boil water. They use those elements to boil water, the fossil fuels, and then the water is put through generators. The steam of the water is put through generators that create electricity. So the new technology is calling for the generation of electricity that uses no water, and that's photovoltaics, light to electricity, thermoelectrics, that's heat to electricity, piezoelectric, that's pressure to electricity, triboelectricity, that's friction to electricity. And as we enter into the age of the nanoscales, these things are just coming right up through our sciences, and they're able to do things they were never able to do before. And again, we're moving away from water, from the use of water. Also, none of these technologies emit any greenhouse gases. Most of them don't make any noise. They're all solid state. They don't have moving parts that wear down. It's a whole new world we have. We have this now. It's not that we're wishing for it. We have it. And so what we're hearing from the fossil fuel industry and all its manifestations is kind of a dying a dying, you know, they had their time. They're like the dinosaurs. They had their time, but it's time to go, especially if we don't, if we want to keep the, slow down the heating up of our planet, which will make the oceans rise and the good ship Earth will go down. No, we can't, there's no profit in a burnt out planet. So, you know, even though you're going to hear from coal and oil and all these things, they know their time is over. And I say, once again, it's time to get star-powered. Let's get solar.
Thank you, Harvey, for your call today. Always something to learn from you. Atlanta is next. Adrian, you're on the air. Hello. Hello, Adrian.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, hi. This is Adrian from Atlanta.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Okay.
I've just started listening to your show recently within the last year or two, and it's really been very informative.
Thank you.
And, you know, I wish that more people were able to listen to the show.
I'll just pass the word around, Adrian, and you'll get a couple more people listening in.
You know, our people are not really that inclined to get new information. They want to go along with the status quo. But I wanted to talk about Donald Trump's campaign in particular. I suspect that Donald Trump's campaign is really a sham. I think Donald Trump is getting paid to run this campaign, because if you look at it, he doesn't really seem like he's trying to really, you know, I think he's gonna get a good amount of white supremacist supporters, but definitely because he's been outcasting so many voters as far as minorities and women voters. I suspect that people were kind of fed up with, you know, the way it looks, they're fed up with the Democrats, primarily Obama. So they were saying, "Oh, we're not gonna vote for a Democrat this next election." So I think the way they designed it is they put someone like Donald Trump in there that's so radically white supremacist and so Hitler-like that if he gets in as the Republican candidate, then people are going to say, oh, even the minorities who possibly wouldn't go vote would say, oh, you know what, we have to vote for somebody other than Donald Trump, so we have to vote for Hillary. So I think it's just a way, by putting Donald Trump in there, I think it's just a way that they designed it to ensure Hillary's win.
Now, why could it be, in your view, why couldn't it be that this is all 100% Donald Trump? Why do you see an invisible hand here?
Well, I suspect that, you know, Donald Trump, I'm not saying Donald Trump is a genius, but he's not a dumb person. Of course, he had a lot of help from when he was younger to make the money he's made, but he didn't stay having money all this time being an idiot. So that's why I suspect that what he's doing is he's getting paid for. It doesn't make sense for him to just be this idiotic. It makes more sense for him to be getting paid.
It doesn't make sense to be this idiotic.
Yeah, well, it sounds crazy, but it makes more sense that somebody's paying him to do this, because, you know,
he doesn't need that kind of money. I really think that he is being a genuine article with, you know, turning up the volume a little bit, because this is what he needs and this is what he uses to distinguish himself from the so-called mealy-mouthed, timid other combatants in the field. So he emerges in the minds of the public as a guy who says what he means and means what he says and doesn't hold back, you know, and this is what makes him so refreshing, because it's brutal honesty, but it is honesty. And they're marketing this. This is the thing. Trump, early on, figured out what he needed more than anything else was a way of distinguishing himself. And he chose a place where no other candidates are willing to go, because they consider the price too heavy. And it worked spectacularly. The man went from 0 to 80 miles an hour in no time flat. And he got that by actually feeding into these racist, but very carefully covered up feelings in the United States. But he's nonetheless speaking to a broad audience that identifies with that.
But the thing about it is, let's say we had a candidate like Marco Rubio get elected for the Republican nomination. There would probably be a better chance for him to win the general election than Donald Trump, in my opinion. Like, I understand there are a lot of white supremacists out there, and there's a lot of people out there who act like they're not racist and really are. But the bottom line, in today's population, the way it is with especially the Hispanic vote, and even the women, he's been outcasting the women voters.
Well, he's offended many women voters, but his calculation is that he, by offending many women voters, he's actually attracting even more support from the Neanderthals out there who hate women.
Yeah, you're right, and he does have a lot of support.
He's very carefully pinpointed these areas where he can rule by himself. He could dominate the field by himself because nobody else wants to be there with him. So he's making the greatest use of the monopoly he has in the arena that he has because nobody else wants to go there. This is what has fueled his campaign.
I'm sorry. Do you think that he'll be able to win the general election?
I hope not. But, you know, this is the United States where money talks. And we have in this race, we have quite a few people who are. This is one of the costliest campaigns. It's money talking. Everybody's got money. Hillary Clinton intends to just buy the presidency. She's raising money to the tune of half of that $5 billion that they project will be spent in this 2016 cycle. So there's a lot of money that is in play. Rubio and Cruz, they are low down on the ladder. The moneyed people are the ones to watch because with the money, they will buy the influence and they will buy the coverage that they need. And so far, Trump has just done a phenomenal job of getting all this lift for free. he's done a great job.
He's done a great job with that. But, you know, in this country, I think that I think that the presidents are actually selected and not actually voted for. And I think, you know, I have a strong feeling that Hillary Clinton is the next selection they've made because she's in the same group as Clinton, as Obama. I think they're all in the same general group, part of the whole system that they want to perpetuate.
And I think you're absolutely right about that. The thing is whether people will wake up in the volumes that they need to wake up and in within the time frame that they need to wake up to change that course that already has been set in motion. Thanks a lot, Adrian, for your call today.
Thank you, ma'am.
I appreciate it. Okay, so David from Brooklyn, what have you to say?
Oh, I'm glad to speak to you. There's one thing I'm not glad about is I missed your analysis of the charades that went on Tuesday night because I wasn't around.
You could get it on the podcast.
I was just about to explain. I have no computer. I have no cell phone or smartphone or any of those distractions. I know I'm missing out. But I'm also missing out on being followed on that.
Okay. So what are you contributing today?
Well, I want to go a little further of wonderful Harvey from, where is he, Berkeley?
Yes.
It made a lot of sense, but I have to bring up Nikola Tesla. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Sure.
We could have had free energy decades ago. But thanks to J.P. Morgan, we don't. There is free energy out there, and there's people who make free energy machines. They either get killed or it's taken from them, or it's hidden good, so they don't know what I mean. The cabal doesn't know that they have it. So we don't need fossil fuels for anything.
So what, therefore, do you think, why do you think that the energy industry,
the cabal, does
it want us off the grid?
Why don't they want us off the grid? Of course, it's for money. There's no money in free energy. And that's what J.P. Morgan said to Henry Ford, because Henry Ford had a choice of the gasoline engine or Tesla's had a free motor, free energy motor. I don't know what went down, but I'm sure J.P. Morgan made him an offer he couldn't refuse. That's why we don't have free energy.
What makes you so sure about that?
The money. Because that's what he said to Tesla, because Tesla had free energy. With the meters. J.P. Morgan said to Tesla, where are we going to put the meters for free energy? And Tesla said, you don't need meters. And that's when the coincidentally burnt down his laboratory. So it's all about the money.
All right, it's all about the money.
Besides the control.
Even, and perhaps especially with energy.
Yeah, it's a whole cartel, and it's all part of the cabal.
Well, thank you so much for your call today, David.
Okay, thanks for taking it. Love you.
Thank you so much. We have from New Jersey yet another view on the issue of climate change. So Harvey has begun his own thread here. Hello, Kojo. You're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Happy holidays and the best of health to you in 2016.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I agree with a lot of the things that are being said, but the control of the climate has many different aspects. I think that COP21 qualified some of our world leaders for an Emmy or an Oscar, because they went there with the full knowledge that the state of Iran has 100 million barrels of oil in the pipeline, ready to go online, ready to sell. And I think that the last caller was correct, is that they still do want us to stay on oil for money, but also for control. I read the emails that were on Bernie Sanders' website, in which he talked about how ExxonMobil had deliberately forged their information and strayed us along an incorrect path. And in some respects, that is correct. I don't see how they can ever prosecute ExxonMobil, because ExxonMobil was always in touch with the United States government. They knew everything Exxon was doing. So I can't really fault them on trying to tell the future, especially when the government knew about it. But one of the things that the email said was that the scientists had already determined that the hole in the ozone layer was disrupted, and that would allow energy into our atmosphere, into our world, and that would drive climate change. I think it was duplicitous how they swayed the argument to only look at the results of this heat hitting the atmosphere, the heating of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, when the main focus is really on the ability of the heat from the sun to enter our atmosphere in the first place. I say that another document that was referenced from those emails stated that not all the countries of the world would be affected equally from the effects of climate change. So as I look back now, I think that perhaps climate change was weaponized. But the bottom line is that I believe that if we really wanted to slow down the effects of global warming, what we really should do is close the hole in the ozone layer. Let's put the ozone back into the atmosphere. And I think that can be relatively simply accomplished with our technologies today, I believe that if we redesigned our drones, we have a lot of these drones, if we redesign our drones to feed the upper atmosphere, the stratosphere, with ozone, the ozone that we seed into the atmosphere will chemically combine with the ozone there, and the concentrations will build. And that will hinder and reduce the amount of energy coming from the sun that will hit our atmosphere, that will heat up the carbon dioxide. So I think that the discussion has always stayed away from closing the hole in the ozone layer, closing that hole up.
Well, it's an interesting idea that you have here, but how feasible is it to do? I mean, what do you see would be needed in order to get that done? Let's just say that it's a workable idea. I have no idea, but it is a workable idea. But I'm going with your premise that this is something that could be done and that might work. What would be required to make it work?
All we need to do is redesign our drones to take ozone and fly them up into the stratosphere and feed them. I sent this idea to the White House. I sent it to President Obama, and he was kind enough to send me a reply. And they referenced how, as part of the president's plan, there is like something called geoengineering, where they will spray all types of other elements into the atmosphere to try to reflect the sunlight back into outer space. And I don't know how logical that is, trying to reflect sunlight back into outer space. I think it's much more practical to follow the course that nature originally created, and that's to block ultraviolet and sunlight from coming into the planet in the first place with the ozone layer. But the very fact that he can talk about geoengineering, spraying something into the atmosphere so that it'll bounce the sunlight back up, kind of like reflects to my point, where if you have these drones, instead of just make them really carry a payload of ozone, flying high in the sky, 200, 300, 500, put them a half a mile apart at, 80,000 feet, 90,000 feet, and just let the ozone seep into the atmosphere. Natural chemistry will do the rest, because ozone, when it's released into the atmosphere, will combine with the sunlight and create more of a concentration of ozone. And the resulting oxygen and heat will dissipate in the atmosphere. So if you look in your regular chemistry books, you'll see, look at ozone, you see that's the natural cycle. All we have to do would be like to give a stem cell treatment to the atmosphere. Let's spray, seed ozone back into the stratosphere. And we'll close up that hole, and that will prohibit sunlight from coming down, heating up the carbon dioxide. It'll prohibit heating up the methane, and it'll slow down the heating of the planet.
Now, do you think this isn't being tried? Well, clearly, the White House and scientists kind of have been discussing something along these lines, I'm sure, that the possibility exists for these things to happen in the same way that cloud seeding has been used and is still being used in order to produce rain in places that are unusually dry. And this is the same kind of technique you're talking about. But I have to ask you now, when this happens, let's project that your theory can go forward, all right? And the idea is catching on that we replenish the ozone and therefore we patch up the big hole. Now, are you opening the door here to something else? And is this what you think might be in the way of promulgating this idea and propagating this idea as a global effort, because there may be plans to use the same methods to achieve other aims? And if we have this thing about nations having to come together to replenish the ozone layer and fixing the Earth this way and reducing the carbon that is now created a hole through which the ultraviolet rays are coming. Now, there's no money in that.
Well, you know, it would create jobs. It would give the drone pilots some jobs. And it would also create, jobs by having people service and create the ozone to fill the drones in the first place. But I would say that also it would diminish the ability for global warming to be weaponized. Look at what's happening in some of the parts of the world, the Philippines and Europe. This is like the Rahm Emanuel rule, where if there's a disaster, we can make some money. And I think that when you look at COP21, a lot of the discussion was upon who's going to pay the developing nations, emerging nations, compensation. And nobody stepped forward, and that really, they all stepped backwards. And also in the COP21, they talked about the transmission of pertinent technology so that they can be leapfrogging up to a point where they don't really need fossil fuels. Well, those people in control and the corporations, I don't think will really want them to leapfrog out of their control. They don't want to transmit any technology that will remove them from the control of fossil fuels, from the control of everything, really. So I think that that was just a catch-22, you know, more futility, discussing the futility. But really, anybody would have the technical ability to do it, even though the hardest part would be to convince the government to let you do it. The government doesn't really want to stop the melting of the ice. You know, right now it still may be a little bit too difficult for Shell to drill in the Arctic, but they really do want to. Just as soon as the price goes up, they'll be back. Right now the price is down because that's a weapon against Russia and a weapon against Venezuela, and that's a weapon. But just as soon as the price goes up, Shell will be right back. And once they have a oil leak in the Arctic, it will destroy the plankton, and that will be just as devastating as Fukushima is right now with the radiation. But let's say Jim Bezos, this guy who has the rocket, he has billions of dollars. He could buy some drones, fill them up with ozone, and if the government allows him to, he could close the hole in the ozone layer himself. So it is possible if you give me $1 billion.
Well, you know, this is a very fascinating discussion, Kojo, with a very interesting set of ideas. But I do see some questions that would arise. For example, who owns the atmosphere? How are they going to divvy it up? And who has the right to regulate what is done in the atmosphere, even if it is about fixing a global problem? You know, we're going to get into these kinds of things as to, you know, who has the right to do it? And under what conditions are they going to do it? Who's going to regulate this global effort? And, you know, is it just ozone that's going to be put there? You know how governments behave. First, you know, they say they're going to put ozone back, and next thing you know, people are falling out all over the world from just breathing. So you never know. This is a fascinating, fascinating idea. And I thank you so much for bringing it to our attention and sharing it with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. Fly your flag at 888-874-4888 right after this. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your calls on Free Your Mind Friday at 888-874-4888. In this segment, we start off in Chicago with Henry. You're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Interesting calls you had there in regards to climate control. I never knew that you could repair the ozone, so that was a very interesting last call that you had in regards to that. So, but, you know, obviously one of the biggest pollutants in the environment that not too many people talk about is war. You know, war is like probably the biggest pollutant.
Very good point.
It's the biggest pollutant, one of the biggest pollutants in this world. So, you know, outside of, you know, just reducing carbon emissions, if we can stop, you know, people from bombing each other, then, you know, we could help the environment. But what I wanted to call about, wanted to give some updates in Chicago in regards to, you know, the political activity going on here in Chicago. And over the last 2 weeks, I've been actually attending community meetings, community organizations to kind of get a gauge on, you know, what's been going on. And it is amazing that the youth of Chicago is really taking up the mantle on this issue. Today there were some protests around Midway Airport where they were, you know, planning to basically disrupt a lot of, you know, a lot of people flying in and out of Midway. And it's drawing like a lot of attention here because of the fact that, you know, you can't disrupt, you know, a major airport's business. But, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, they're trying to get attention to a lot of causes here that's happening in Chicago. One of the meetings that I attended this week was organized by a young 20-year-old man. And it really made me proud to hear this man and to hear all the other youth talk about, you know, the issues, you know, that's been happening in Chicago for years in regards to not just police brutality, but education, unemployment, and other things that, you know, we probably talk about millions and millions of times, you know, on your show that happens in the inner city. And they are very, very versed on, you know, on the real issues and what they want, because that's one thing that kind of surprised me, because one of the things that the young man wanted to do was he wanted to get solutions and things that they want done, you know, within their community and within the city. There were some pros and cons in regards to, you know, what I hear from you know, from the youth and from other organizers in the city. Obviously, the pros is, you know, people are starting to wake up, people are starting to mobilize, people are starting to, you know, be a little active in their roles and trying to get the attention, trying to get their causes put out there, you know, not just in Chicago media, but national, you know, national media as well. The one thing, though, is, as I love the spirit of the youth in regards to organizing, but the one thing that kind of, you know, maybe with the help of, you know, some of people in my age and some of the elders, you know, we have to determine some goals that are realistic and unrealistic, and then some goals that we can attain in the short term, and some goals that, you know, that have to be attained in the long term. A lot of the goals that they were trying to accomplish were, it was basically a lot of, it was too many short-term goals and not enough long-term goals that I would wish they would express. And I understand that, you know, we're in a critical situation here in Chicago, and this is a moment that they can seize to get, you know, some change done. But at the same time, like one of the things that was expressed about, you know, Rahm Emanuel and how can they, you know, get rid of him, and how could they get him to either step down or, you know, have somebody, you know, in office to help remove him. But at the same time, nobody was really thinking about, okay, how do we go to maintain where we don't get another Rahm Emanuel in office? Because obviously the next election cycle, we have to think about that as well. And I expressed this to the young man in regards to, you know, the Harold Washington strategy about getting a group of, you know, getting a group of progressive black, you know, activists, business people, you know, ministers, and, you know, if we can find any progressive politicians, get them for a search committee to find a politician to run on our behalf. And so, you know, he was like, yeah, that's a good idea, you know. But, you know, like I said, it's like, you know, I'm hoping that they would form some long-term goals as well, because they have a lot of good short-term goals. But the long-term goals is something that I would want them to do, because I don't want this to be a situation 20, 40 years from now where we're going through the same thing over and over again. This is something that has to...
Well, we're doing it now. We're going repeating the cycle. First of all, I think it is great, and it's also sad that we are seeing young people step up to the plate because they have no other choice, or they believe they have no other choice. And part of the reason for them stepping forward is the void that is evident, either because people have not stepped forward or because the people who are likely to step forward are themselves injurious to any progress in the community and mm-hmm. anathema, therefore. So they should mm-hmm. not be wanted at all in the process. However, I think, you know, so I'm okay with whatever people are doing to cause attention to be paid to a problem. However, I think mm-hmm. you've got to, we have to do one thing. Everybody's got to do the one thing, which is to punish the Democratic Party. This is such mm-hmm. a simple thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
All over this country, everybody oppressed by this party ought to just stop investing in it and the process as a whole. This is a fraudulent activity. Voting has become a fraudulent activity, and certainly for people who are oppressed, it has become a kind of self-annihilation. You are voting and endorsing policies and people who intend to do you in. So the one thing that could be done immediately, and Chicago is a great place to start. Why? Because one of the presidential candidates has roots in Chicago. The current president has roots in Chicago. The mayor has roots in Chicago. So you punish Chicago's Democratic Party structure, and you get a sympathetic vote all over the country. Opt out. Do not vote until there is a compelling reason to vote. You see, I think people are missing one important point, and that is they have power. They have power.
Mm-hmm.
But they continue to invest in predictable ways of expressing it. And the Democrats don't care. They know how this is going to turn out. You just send out the preachers, and the preachers tell you, bring your souls to the polls. And they get paid for that, one way or the other, for betraying their communities. If people are really serious, they can get this thing done this year for many years to come. Start the process now. Withdraw from the Democratic Party and absolutely destroy it. That's what you have mm-hmm. to be prepared to do. Withdraw your support. Do not participate except when there is a compelling reason and a compelling person to support and a compelling argument to back it all up. Secondly, I think what they need to do is to establish local schools and that teach people how to run for office, to groom organic leadership that is tied into the communities that you live and therefore responding to the unique needs of these communities. You have to grow your own leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things combined, you have a whole new equation at work here. You're not standing for the okey-doke from either the Republicans or the Democrats or even the Green Party or anybody. You are creating your own political reality using the power and the leverage you have now. And this was one of my critiques of the anniversary of the Million Man March. You know, or else what? Justice or else what? What is the what? Mm-hmm. What is the or else?
Yeah.
We are not there in defining what we have to do as punitive action. No more begging and reasoning. You know, I've read today another news conference being called, and what these so-called leaders want is to begin a national dialogue on race. You know, that tired business. My thing is, you don't have time to educate people. If they don't get it by now, just keep moving.
I will say this. A lot of points that you touched on, they've touched on these meetings as well. I was so encouraged about how a lot of the youngsters were slamming the Democratic Party. And it was just very, very eye-opening to me in regards to how they're politically, you know, how they're politically conscious about what's been going on. And yesterday you had Alton Maddox on, and I think he mentioned about I guess you and him were dialoguing about the Jason Van Dyke case and
yes.
how the other cops weren't being indicted yet in regards to his death. And I think he suggested the Illinois
this
Attorney
is the shooting,
General.
This is the shooting of Laquan McDonald.
Yes, and he suggested that the Illinois Attorney General, who is Lisa Madigan here, to write a opinion about getting the other cops indicted. And I think that was what his thing was. But
right.
I was thinking about that, and I was like, well, Lisa Madigan's father is Michael Madigan, who is the head of the Illinois Assembly. And to people who don't know, Michael Madigan is the most powerful politician in Illinois. And he is so entrenched in the Democratic Party, that's not going to happen. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, that's not going to happen. He is not going to let her daughter do anything like that, because at that point you imply, you know, citywide police corruption. And then you also imply corruption among city politics, which Michael Madigan is heavily entrenched in. So
but what Alton was suggesting is that very suggestion is a change in tactic. You see, you have to understand how a system works. When you confront the system by putting the state attorney general on notice, because this is part of what the state attorney general is compelled to do. Nobody has ever forced that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't do it. But
okay.
When the law compels you, when somebody demands that you, as the top prosecutor for the state, make an evaluation as to whether the other police officers who witnessed the killing of Laquan McDonald also should be prosecuted by virtue of the fact that they witnessed a crime, because it has been ruled a crime,
mm-hmm.
they witnessed a crime and therefore and did nothing and therefore are culpable. I mean, these are the tactics. If you understand how the system works, you tackle them at their weak points all the time, and you compel them to respond.
Okay.
And when they
all
don't
right.
respond, whether they respond or not, it is on the books that you have insisted on an answer to which the community is entitled. This is not a favor.
Okay.
This is what they're supposed to do.
Okay. All right. I get it. And you're right, because as much pressure as the city is putting on Anita Alvarez, the same amount of pressure should be put on Lisa Madigan as well in regards
Absolutely.
To the case.
And
okay.
Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. She's yeah. saying, well, there is going to be no prosecution of anybody with respect to the shooting death of Laquan McDonald. Don't look to me. It's not going to
mm-hmm.
happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard a lot about that, and I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, how is the in Chicago, how is the boycotting effort of Magnificent Mile stores? How's that going?
Well, that's still ongoing. However, one of the strategies that we basically have to put in place is, you know, not focus too much on the Magnificent Mile. I mean, it's a very good point to start, but there are other businesses in this city that support a lot of these politicians that is complicit in this corruption that we have to target. And the thing is that they're trying to reach out across the city in regards to what we, you know, who the businesses that we really, really need to attack and to get after, because, you know, the businesses in Chicago, especially the large businesses in Chicago and the politicians are married to the hip. So we have to pinpoint some of, you know, some more of these businesses and not just, you know, not just the Mag Mile. So there is a citywide effort to boycott some of these businesses. The Mag Mile effort is great, but it's a starting point. So the next step is to get across the city to these businesses that support these politicians that's in City Hall right now.
Well, the whole idea, though, that which you've raised is the central idea is, of course, that we're seeing a new level of leadership. It is, of course, sadly, the case that it is coming out of crisis, but that's okay. I'll take it. I'll take it any day. But let us hope that it starts a reorganization of effort with regard to the aggregate interests of a community. And it's about employment. It's about schools. It's about the quality of life. It's about crime. It's about all these things that people automatically dismiss as if these things are not important in these communities and urban areas. Now, just imagine, if you will, if an aggressive effort is made to absolutely trounce the Democratic Party in Chicago, and it's repeated in Washington, D.C., and it's repeated in Philadelphia, and in New York City, and in Boston, and in other areas, where you have a concentration of a group, an ethnic group, Latinos and African Americans, who are slavishly devoted to the Democratic Party, which gives them nothing, you would be amazed at how quickly things would change. And we have to do it for another reason, and that is to bring forth new leadership in a different party structure as well, to reject utterly this duopoly, because they're both, as I said, two wings of a flightless bird.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to create homegrown leadership, but in the meantime, absolutely destroy this party. Do what you can to disrupt it.
Oh, yes.
To wound it and to make it pay for the inattention and the downright the disrespect and the fact that they simply are not performing in a manner that is in accordance with the investment made. That's all. And we always have to remember it is the party of the slavocracy, and it continues to operate in that mindset as well. Thanks so much, Henry, for your call today.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our program today. Really thoughtful opinions, and I thank you all for maintaining such a consistently high standard on this program in offering your thoughts and opinions. I really do appreciate that, because it is a way of paying respect to not just the program, but to all who listen to it and to the station. Coming up next, Guns and Butter. You want to stay tuned for that. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. This is the weekend. Take some time for yourself and get to know the people who have a positive influence in your life. Reject utterly and completely anybody who brings negativity into your life. Don't even think twice about it. Just move them out. You know, vacate them from your life. It's a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.